52 years so far, the world has become a worse and worse place. Every year we have polluted more water than the year before.
Welcome to Nature Bats on the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM, this May 17th, 2016 edition, episode 90 of Nature Bats Last comes to you live from the Mud Hut. And Guy, where are you?
I'm on a train. I was just cut off. I reconnected with you about 10 seconds ago. So that might be happening again. I'm on an Amtrak train from Los Angeles to Oceanside, of all places, headed for a presentation in Encinitas tonight.
Ooh, I bet the folks in Encinitas are going to love you.
The person who took me to the train, a woman named Lorraine, said, I guess if you don't make it, there'll be some happy people that don't hear you tonight.
Yeah, those sleepy little beach towns of privilege are just going to eat your stuff up.
Oh, yeah. They loved it. Neverly Hills Public Library, let me tell you.
Don't tell them their town's going to be underwater soon.
They love that, too.
Yeah. All right. We our thanks to Aprazin for his theme song contribution. You can find more of his work on SoundCloud.com. We're going to try and take some calls today if we can get to you. This is a call-in show, so please prepare questions. Call toll-free at 888-874-4888, 874-4888. Our guest today is Ronnie Dam. Ronnie is a climate reality leader and presenter. After too many years trying to wake people up to the realities of overconsumption and waste, she turned her main focus to overpopulation, the least popular topic out there. She's putting the finishing touches on her upcoming book, An Atypical Chick, which will serve as a call to hybrid women like her. We may not be able to stop anything, but it's well past time we took over. She lives a quiet, for now, and unassuming life in rural western Pennsylvania, back in her hometown where she awaits the zombie apocalypse. Welcome to Nature Bats Last, Ronnie Dam.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
I can barely hear you.
Closer on this microphone. How about that?
You're still kind of faint, but...
This is the problem with living in a small, sleepy town in western Pennsylvania. You learn to speak quietly.
Is that
apparently
better?
That's a lot better, yes.
No, I had my tech come in and fix that. Thank you very much.
No problem. You know, I've been reading your writing, and you use a fair amount of humor in it, which I absolutely love. And why don't we start a bit with your journey to the dark side of climate change and overpopulation and how you found yourself being one of the voices sounding the alarm, so to speak, and how humor plays a role in your work.
Oh, I was a wonderfully sunny person until I read Guy's book, and that's just what started it all. I kid. No, I was right along with him when I read that book, and I thought, oh, okay, there are other people out there that get it. So that was really refreshing to find. People won't listen, I find, unless you can inject some humor in it. When you can make people laugh a little bit, they're more
likely to hear your message.
Yeah, absolutely. Your voice is coming in and out a little bit.
I apologize for that. Let me try one more little thing here.
That's okay. It just, all of a sudden you're really loud and perfect, and then you kind of fade away like you're in a closet.
I'm actually not moving at all.
There we go. That's better. Whatever
okay,
that
good
was.
just
I will not move away from this mic for
do not move for the next 40 minutes.
I can do that. So, no, it's just looking around and seeing that people are maybe trying, but they don't get it at all.
In fact, as I was coming in to do this show, I said, well, going to go talk about the end of the world as we know it. And the response was, well, yeah, in about 3,000 years.
Right.
No, try maybe 2030. So I've always been dark and cynical. Just I can hide it well under comedy and people laugh and they go, oh, wait, I really listened to her. So hopefully that's working out.
So, I mean, what kind of people are you having conversations with besides the people online and what I would call, you know, the doomer world, besides the people that are, you know, speaking to the choir? Are you having conversations with local people, with neighbors, and are they receptive to what you're saying?
Not at all. Not even a little bit. I was living in LA for about 7 years, South Orange County before that. And of course, there's a really good contingent of eco people, as I would call them. However, even there, I felt like maybe with the more entitled people, how do I want to say that? With the more wealthy people, their approach to green is to buy perhaps $600 vegan shoes or, you know, the top of the line makeup and skincare products that will really, you know, save the world. So I found that a little distressing. And I had the opportunity to move back to my hometown in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, where we're surrounded by fracking. And people said, why would you leave the eco-friendly people in LA? And, well, we go where we're needed, is what I would say. They've got it covered back there as much as humanly possible, as Guy is finding today.
Right.
Encinitas. That would be very nice. That's actually a nice community down there. But, no, it's not being well received at all in a community surrounded by fracking, pesticides, what else? You know, these are old steel towns. Right. Steel made the money. Steel was poisoning our land, poisoning our water. And fracking will do the same thing. So, yeah, not really well received at all.
So what pushed you to overpopulation? I mean, obviously you lived in Los Angeles. I mean, that could help.
Yeah, very quickly. Too many people, not enough serial killers, as my
opinion
says. Overpopulation. I mean, I just look around.
Yeah.
Everyone says, well, consumption is the problem. We're just consuming too much. Well, maybe if there were fewer of us, the consumption would go down for that as well.
Right.
There isn't a problem out there that you can't point to overpopulation. Not one. Water, too many fossil fuels being used. I mean, name a problem. Overpopulation is the answer.
I think some people may argue that civilization is the problem and population is a symptom of that.
That's
intriguing. Hadn't thought of that.
Well, yeah, I'd like to point out that you see it right away, that you see it every day. There's too many people consuming too much stuff, but that's what civilization is about. But, you know, you see it, but I know, maybe 6 or 7 billion people who don't see it yet.
Mm.
So what makes you different, do you think?
I've been cursed with objectivity and insight. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't have any children. Quite frankly, when I shuffle off this mortal coil, I shouldn't give a crap. I don't know how much we can swear on this show. I know you have.
You can swear all you want.
Because I swear a lot. Thanks. I shouldn't care at all, but something within me drives me to try to. I'm not trying to save the planet. The planet will be fine without us. And I'm not even trying to save people, because the fewer people, the better.
Ladies and gentlemen, now arriving in Santa Ana. Will be a brief stop. Please gather your personal belongings and make your way safely down the stairs to the door.
That's got to be okay. The train announcement song, guys. Travels.
Can you hear me still, Ronnie?
I'm still here, yeah. Can you hear
me? Yeah. I had some serious interference there for a second.
I thought that was the train conductor.
It probably was, actually.
Yeah. There's
you know, speaking of which, the three of us don't have kids, Guy, myself, and you. And I want to talk about your piece about the mama bear myth. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about that and how you perceive this myth?
That was written in a fit of just angst over. We call them mombies, and I'm going to piss many people just all over the place, but I'm beyond caring. But we have these women who self-describe themselves as mama bears, and they're like, don't look at my kid the wrong way, or you're not paying enough attention to my kid, or just anything that's conceived slights to their children.
Right.
I find that so amusing because, you know, if they're finding insult in school with their child, they're not seeing what's going to happen to their child's life in the next, say, 20, 30 years. They're still feeding them processed foods. They're still having them drink out of plastic bottles, using plastic bags, plastic. So how can you say you're overprotective of your child when you're not protecting them on a daily basis over these bigger issues?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, it seems to me that people like myself and you and Guy, we kind of get accused of being self-absorbed because and selfish because we don't have children. And so do you have a general response to people that do that to you, or do people do that to you?
Oh, yes. I mean, I'm past the age where they do it very much anymore. Luckily, I'm 48. I'm not going to have children. Finally now, but all through my life, yes. Maybe not so much called selfish, but one of my responses was, look, I just loved my children too much to bring them into this world.
Right. Oh, that's a good point. I may steal that from you.
Totally.
But, I mean, we actually had a listener recommend you for the show, and she mentioned that she loves your writing and that because of your humor and because you're very quick-witted, and you not only get it, but you're able to pull people in and have civil discussions. And I think that's somewhat difficult to do when the topic is overpopulation or climate change. Do you find yourself having conversations online, or do you find yourselves in debates?
That's a good question. I stay out of a lot of debates because I like to stand back and let people kind of have it out. I'll post a topic. I'll try to say something that's perhaps controversial, but then I'll step back and let other people have the conversation around it, see what people are saying. And so I do try to inject humor. I try really, really hard to try to get people to be a little more objective. Instead of attacking and dismissing, try to see where that other person is coming from. I'm not having a lot of success on that either, but the people that you're referring to that I've met through all of your groups are just really amazing, and we call them doomers, and I probably am a doomer too, but I try to keep a little bit more optimism on it, which is probably weird to say. I'm one of the least optimistic people I know.
Yeah, we actually, it's odd because we tend to get pushback if we show any sort of optimism in the doomer world. We're a very obviously a dark crowd, and you know, we throw around the word hopium a lot. If people have any,
I love that word.
Yeah, the studio is actually asking me to have you call in because they can't hear you at all.
Okay,
I can hear you at times. So do you have the number, or should I give it to you?
Let's see. My husband's here, and he's going to have me take the number in his phone. So I'll do that right now.
Okay, call him, and we'll wait for you.
Okay.
So Ronnie's going to reconnect with us in a minute. Guy, you got something to say?
Well, that number is 888-874-4888 for Ronnie and anybody else who wants to connect with us. I apologize for my conductor screaming not only in my ear but in yours as well. This is one of the disadvantages of civilization. It's not as if there aren't a few others, but you have to hear the conductor screaming in my ear over the radio.
So what time's your presentation tonight?
I have no idea. I have this spreadsheet, and I take it out and look at it just enough to stay one jump ahead. And so I knew when I had to get on the train, and I know that a guy named Dwayne is going to meet me on the other side. And he just sent me a message when we're doing the show to ask if I'd be ready for lunch when I stepped off the train. And, of course, I said yes, because I always say yes to food.
Right. I mean,
there were two speaking tours when I didn't get fed for 30 hours or more in a row. And so now anybody mentions food and I tell them I'm hungry all the time.
Well, you know, now you know what it's like for a great deal of many people on the planet. This is a good test for you and for me. Yeah. I don't want to go through it. But all right, looks like we have Ronnie back. Ronnie, are you there?
I am here. Sorry about that.
All right. I'm gonna move on with the next question. I can hear you perfectly. So,
okay, good.
We often, and I'm speaking for myself in particular, I often get in discussions with folks who love culture more than they seem to love life, and they argue about all the wonderful things about civilization and what it has to offer, and they offer all the problems that our living arrangement has addressed. And unfortunately, the problems that they're talking about are the actual problems that civilization and our living arrangement causes in the first place. You wrote a reply to an article in the Huffington Post that basically said, we're not screwed, and here's why. And it seems to me we love hope. And you kind of addressed that article about, you kind of tore it down about why that we are screwed. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we're totally screwed. we're not screwed, and here's why. No, we are completely screwed because we are running out of water. We are in climate change. I mean, just look around. Even in California, where a guy is, the El Nino didn't give nearly as much water as they thought it would. And now we're ushering in an El Nino that's going to be hotter and drier than they were expecting it to be. So it's just a compounding problem. The methane that's being released, the feedback loops that we're experiencing because of climate change, there's no way we're not screwed. None whatsoever.
Yeah. And so how do you deal with that personally?
Personally? Hopium and a lot of denial of myself. I don't know how I'm not an alcoholic. That's all I can say. How do I deal with it? I just go through day by day. I've got wonderful relationship, so that's good. I have my animals. I have my garden. I just go through it because I don't really have a choice.
Have you gone through different stages of grief and anger and denial and all that, and do you waver back and forth between some of those? Or
I waver back and forth. You know, it's funny. I'm out there doing all this, but really, I probably don't think we have a chance at all. I'm just trying to. We're past mitigation. There's no doubt about that. It's all about the adaptation at this point, and some of us will adapt, others won't, and to those who aren't going to be able to adapt, all right, goodbye, I'm sorry, we tried. So I think I waver back and forth quite a bit. If you're willing to see what's going on and join us, great. If you're not, move along, we have no use for you.
Right, right.
Life is hard. So that didn't sound any harder than life is to me. You're quite a bit younger than Mike and I, and so undoubtedly your perspective is influenced by the way you grew up and the people with whom you grew up and the generation you're part of and all that. Can you talk about that a little bit? I don't even know what generation you call yourself. I think you predate millennials, and I don't know where you fit in. So maybe you can fill us in on what it's like to be you and your generation.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm 48, so I grew up right when, I don't know, life was really good. We were experiencing everything that was wonderful about life. We had enough. I wasn't wealthy growing up, but I was surrounded by woods, and I got to play in the woods all the time. I was surrounded by nature, and I figured everyone grew up like that and was lucky like that. You know, we were really close with the outside. But really, as far as the millennials go, I feel like some of them really get it, and some of them have absolutely no clue. It depends on where they were raised, how they were raised. The older generation, I feel like they should have gotten it. Like, I'm talking much older. They really should have gotten it because they went through the very hard times. As far as the baby boomers go, I'm in that Generation X, I believe. We never really had a space because there were so few of us.
You're actually my age. I just thought you were younger from your picture. I'm so much older and weathered looking.
It's the Italian. I have very oily skin. It keeps, and that, well, you don't have kids either. I was going to say it's the not having kids, but thank you.
Yeah, no. I don't have an excuse there. I don't know what happened.
Well, Mike taught for quite a while, and that puts some gray hairs on you, as I can attest.
Well, I have gray hair. I let it out. You can see it in that picture, actually.
Blow it up, I guess.
So,
I don't know what made me care. I really don't.
I have a question that was triggered by your bio, and that is hybrid women. What's a hybrid woman? When I read that, I think, you know, Dalmatian and German Shepherd. I don't know how that fits in.
I prefer Chow and, no, I don't know. Hybrid women. I didn't even know what this was myself until perhaps a couple years ago. There are women out there like me who are naturally high in testosterone. We're not necessarily gay. We don't want to be men. We're not transgendered. We might be gender fluid. I personally am completely heterosexual. Nothing wrong with anything else. But we have a slightly higher, or maybe way higher, testosterone level than most women. And we see things a little bit differently. We don't want to have children. We are not reluctant to step into positions of power. We have, even though we don't want to have children of our own, we have great compassion for the world, and we want to help. A lot of the women who have drawn me into this, I would classify them as hybrid women as well. And when I say it's time for us to take over, that's what I'm talking about. It's not the mothers out there. They have their role. It's those of us who are free to use all this care and emotion that we have to try to ease us into what's going to be happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what is the response from people that generally follow traditional gender roles? I mean, do you meet resistance and pushback from that kind of dialogue?
Yeah, they don't get me at all. Just like I've never gotten them. I've never had that desire to have a child. I've never wanted one. I don't run up to them and go, oh, it's so cute. I can't, no. Don't even show me a sonogram. I don't want to see it. So I don't understand them. They don't understand me. And they don't see that we're doing this for them. We have no children. We're doing it for your children. Will you please listen to us? I'm not making crazy money. It's like, oh, yeah, your climate people are just, you're making money off of climate change. Yeah, I'm here to tell you we're not, right?
Yeah, you know, I just came across an article that I did not read in detail this morning about gender fluidity in the brain, mm-hmm. or maybe it was yesterday. And, you know, this shouldn't be at all surprising. There are lots of species out there that don't have two genders, and yet we try to, it seems this dominant culture anyway, tries to push all people into A or B. Right, it's all a black and white sort of perspective on the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that science is catching up with reality. Can you comment a little bit on that from your hybrid gender fluid perspective?
Yes, Native Americans, I think it was, recognized as many as 5 different genders. I don't know how we got to the point where we had to fit everyone into 2 neat little sides and boxes. I'm not quite sure how that happened, but it's getting worse instead of better. We're finally recognizing, you know, we finally as a society are getting okay with things that we should be okay with, like gay, transgender, bisexual, that's fine. I find that even people in those categories, however, don't quite understand the hybrid woman and haven't really considered that because we don't have a neat little box yet. Maybe we are a different gender. My joke is, and you're the first ones to basically hear this, is my joke is I'm a gay man trapped in a woman's body.
Right on.
Because I don't desire other women. I'm, you know, just into guys.
I like
dicks. That's where I am. So, but people don't understand that. And it's like, well, where are you? I never had the same thoughts, desires as other girls growing up, it's like I didn't fit in with them, and I didn't know why, because no one was defining this. And we're still kind of undefined. That's what the whole book is about, an atypical chick. I'm not typical, and I never really knew anyone like me, but we are out there, finally. We're finally finding each other. Thank you, Facebook and other things that let us reach out to each other and go, oh, my God, I thought I was the only one out there. And we can band together and really be a force in this world once we get ourselves defined, because this world needs definitions.
Well, absolutely. I mean, so where do you see hybrid women as far as the role they're going to play with all of these, you know, catastrophes that seem to be connecting at, you know, simultaneously?
Yeah. Well, most importantly, we have to step out and say, look, it's okay to not have children. We've never wanted them, but there is another option. You don't have to have them. Even in this day and age, even in all the progress we've made, a lot of women feel like it's their duty. That's what they're here for. That's what they have to do. And so they have children. They've never been given an alternative. We want to step forward and say, here's an alternative. Come with us. The earth needs you. All of the earth's children need you. I mean, this all sounds kind of, you know, high and mighty and out there, but we need the paradigm shift, and we need it really badly. And that's what we're moving towards, is trying to say, look, stop it with the kids. Come with us. Let's go do this.
Right. So, I mean, and that's an unusual path, because it's, you know, it's clearly outside the dominant narrative, you know, to procreate and to have the little ones and make little replicas of yourself. So really, I mean, you've had an unusual and unique journey. Who's inspired you along the way?
I've looked up to probably the really big people out there. Probably my first idol was, of all people, back in the early 80s, Jacques Cousteau. Like, that wasn't a normal idol for a, you know, a girl in her, not even in her teens yet, but those are the kind of people I looked up to. I mean, Jane Goodall, Rachel Carson, ugh, that woman. Yeah. And to have her die of cancer like that after she was writing all about that, those are the kind of people that step out there and do things and make it, I don't know, I'd love to follow in their footsteps if I can. It's getting too late for me, but hopefully I'll get there.
I have a question that I get all the time, and I want you to answer it for me, because I've never come up with a satisfactory answer, at least for the people asking the question. So you say we're screwed in the not-too-distant future, and yet you propose that we act differently. So what's the point? I get this all the time. We're screwed anyway. Why are you doing what you're doing? Why am I doing what I'm doing? You know, why don't you just leave people alone and let them be miserable, I mean happy, in their own little lives?
I like that. I ask myself that all the time. It's almost a daily wrestle for me as well. You know, if I could stop, I would. I don't know. I just have this drive. I was maybe meant for things that I can't control. We're here for a reason. You know, there's the whole voluntary human extinction movement, which is an awesome movement. There are some really good people in those groups, and they're fun to talk to. And everyone comes to them and says, well, then why don't you just commit suicide? Well, that's not the point. We're here. Let's do what we can while we're here. It would be so much easier to just ignore what's going on, but it just hurts too much. I can't not do something. So that's my answer. I can't not.
Well, that's a great answer. You're listening Nature Bats Last in the Progressive Radio Network. We're speaking with Ronnie Dam. She's a climate reality leader and presenter, and she's a blogger and soon to be author. And I want to talk a little bit about predicaments. And you know, you mentioned that, you know, we are screwed, and it seems to me that the conversations we have with people who are quote unquote outside of the realities of climate change, they don't believe in predicaments. They believe every single thing has a solution. And I find that is the biggest hurdle for me to climb, is there's a word, predicament, with a meaning, but most people on this planet don't believe in it. What are your thoughts about that?
I don't know what to say to those people. I kind of lump them in with deniers, basically. It's like you're not seeing the reality of this. We don't want to say, I told you so, but that's what's going to happen. We want to be wrong. I'm speaking for you. I'm sorry, but that's how I come across this. Look, I want to be wrong. I'm not, and I know I'm not, but I'd like to be. Predicament, all I can think of is the Edgar Allan Poe story, quite frankly, when you say that word.
Yeah, it's absolutely, it's a troubling word for people, because usually when I bring it up or write about it, people are a little puzzled by it, and they keep going back to the well of, we haven't tried this, or why don't we try that? And, we can find Earth 2, or we can go solar, or we can go wind. And I've asked people repeatedly what would it take for you not to go to, for example, a voting booth? What would it take for you to stop voting? What would it take for you to come to a realization of acceptance? And they cannot actually answer the question. They keep going mm-hmm. back, well, if you vote for Bernie, or have you tried, solar energy, and have you thought about this particular technology? And literally, right. Like, their brain will not allow them to go past a particular point of no return.
It's so true. I was having that talk with my mentor the other day, and he's like, I post about dead whales, and it gets way more response than when I post about CO2. And I say, well, dead whales are tangible. They're right there. This other stuff that, like methane, it's intangible. It's too big. People can't wrap their heads around it. They can't believe that they're seeing the end. It's just, they can't get that. It's too abstract. I'm guessing, because I don't know why people don't get it either.
Yeah, maybe if we give like them infrared glasses, they'll see the methane.
God, yeah, that didn't even work out in California at the Aliso plant.
Right.
They had methane on that, the black light and everything. We saw it, still didn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I don't know what it takes.
Yeah.
Even on this tour, I've been asked a couple of times after the presentation. Actually, I haven't been asked. I've been told in no uncertain terms, we can fix this. And they just keep repeating the same thing over and over. And I ask them, how can we fix a predicament rooted in civilization using the tools of civilization? And not to mention that we can't fix these self-reinforcing feedback loops. We can't fix methane release coming out of the Arctic Ocean. We can't fix moistening the atmosphere. These things are beyond human control and have been for a long time. So I don't get it. I don't get what we're going to fix. But
I don't
think
either,
it's that
considering.
Exceptionalism.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's that American exceptionalism. It's that we can fix anything sort of approach that maybe got us through World War II and so on. I really don't know where that comes from anymore.
Yeah, it's
a willful
definitely
blindness.
In our fabric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, willful blindness. And that's, I totally lost my thought, and it was a really good one, so I'm going to try to get it back. Oh, that's what it was. In overpopulation, that's one of the arguments, too. We don't have overpopulation. In fact, we have to have as many babies as possible, because if we don't, we might not be having the one kid that could fix all this.
Right,
sorry.
Yeah, we may miss that problem solver, that one in 7 billion that's going to pull us out of the darkness, so to speak.
Right. I find I can't even argue that point, because it's not based in logic.
Right. Well, you did write an article that you talked about the arguments that are, put against you as far as population growth. And could you talk a little bit about that, some of the pushback you get when people are not worried about population?
Oh, that's a big one, because you're going against human biology. You're going against, someone once told me, you're going against the face of a baby. You think people are going to listen to you when they look at the face of a baby? And I went, oh, I am evil, huh?
I don't think they're that cute, actually.
It's human biology. And it's, then you move into, it's a right. I have the right. We have the right to have children. Well, I'm sorry, but there's the old saying, your rights end where my nose begins. When your little rights start consuming all my resources, where are my rights?
Yeah.
You know, arguments are, oh, but there's plenty of room for all of us. Well, if you put all the people in the world together, they'd only take up the state of Texas or some ridiculous statistic like that.
Yeah,
there's not enough water.
Yeah, and they're immune to statistics. You know, if you throw the population growth at them, you know, daily, birth minus deaths, and you say, you know, it's about 240,000 people a day, birth minus deaths. And then you say, well, if you're an American and you have a child, that's you consume as much as about 33 Kenyans. So if you have two children, that's really like having 66 Kenyans. But none of that means anything to them because you're right. They feel entitled to this way of life that, yeah, I want to have a kid. And, well, I don't really want this kid to be bored because, you know, there'll be an only child. So I'll basically just create a toy for this child, which is, you know, a sibling. In a lot of cases, and there's people that's exactly what they're thinking is. I have plenty of friends who have had a second child because they don't want this child to be bored.
Right.
And it's insane.
And by the way,
I'm
a big fan of putting all those people into Texas. I think that'd be a great idea. That's a wonderful start.
I am too. I'll stay here in Pennsylvania. Thank you very much. Yeah, and that's, you know, you went back to the selfishness issue. Oh, aren't you so selfish to not have children? Well, when you talk to people about children and why they're having them, what are the first two words of every sentence? I want. We
want.
Yeah. Yes. What's more selfish than that?
Nothing. Right. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Thank you. I'm going to be so popular when this book comes out. It's going to be unreal.
Get ready for death threats.
I am. I have blood thrown at me constantly. It'll be great.
Yeah, it'll be great. So, I mean, amongst all this, you know, talk and things that are gloomy and dark, who or what inspires you?
Oh, I don't really know. I just look at the world. I look at nature. Trees are just the greatest things in the whole world, and I just look at them and I feel inspired. I don't know. What's my big inspiration? That's a hard one. I just get through every day at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it seems obviously humor inspires you on some level because you use it a great deal. And I see that your Skype handle here is somebody, it's comedian Johnny Dam. So there's comedy in your household.
Yeah. That's my husband. He's my third. I'm his fourth. We have seven between us. Yes.
No.
We didn't give up. He does inspire me because he did give me the freedom and the support to let me be myself. I can totally be myself with him, and he encourages me daily. He kept saying, you know, what do you care about? I'd say, well, dolphins, polar bears, bats, honeybees, monarch butterflies, what do I care about? I don't know. And he kept pushing. He said, look, I follow my passion of comedy. What's your passion? Find it. And finally I went, well, climate kind of encompasses all of it. And I went to the climate reality training, as you mentioned, and that's through Al Gore. You know, what people think of him. You can either mention him and get completely shut down, or you mention him and people say, oh, that's really cool. Well, he's a pretty cool guy. I like him. But he gave training and gives us this giant presentation. It's well over 400 PowerPoint slides and tasks us to go forth and give that presentation.
Right.
The amusing thing is it kind of ends on a positive note, and, you know, Mr. Gore himself is very positive that we can turn this around. No, it still just depresses me to give that presentation. At the end, when I'm trying to do the sell on the positive, it doesn't ring true.
Well, I mean, we talked about Al Gore a little bit last week or a couple weeks ago. Corey had Corey Morningstar on. We played his latest TED Talk, and you're right. I mean, I watched his TED Talk, and in the beginning, it is doom and gloom, and he does an excellent job of setting it up, and he's right on with the science. But then, you know, right at the end, you know, he's we're going to win this. And, you know, I don't blame the guy because that's who he is, and that's his fabric, and that's the entire culture, and he represents the culture on some levels, and he represents the climate culture as well on some levels. So it's interesting that you can take that presentation and at the end, you still know. You still know that, it's we're not getting out of this. And so do you see yourself going out on the road more? I mean, after the book comes out and do you see yourself presenting? And if so, how are you going to finish your presentations? Are you going to try something upbeat, or are you going to, just lay it out there?
I probably will just lay it out there. My presentations are going to morph away from climate reality while using those statistics, but more into the overpopulation. And what I'll try to do is I'll try to be the inspiration for other people to either join in with us or go out on their own and try to spread the word. One of the things I say at the end of the presentations now is, don't shut up. Right. in polite society, we, the intelligent ones with something really to say, we shut up. And we don't want to put our views out there to the people that are, wrong.
Yeah.
Because we're being polite. And we've got to stop that. We've got to keep talking. Well, it's not worth arguing about. It kind of is.
It's our life. It's all life, actually.
It's the whole world. Maybe we should keep talking. So that's what I just try to encourage people to not give up, because while we're still here, we may as well do as best as we can. My husband hates to go to the hardware store with me because I don't see tools. I see weapons for the zombie apocalypse. Like, ooh, you can use that one at close range to stab them in the eyes. And he just looks at me and, I have it all lined up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's great to hear that there's other people besides Guy going out there, and I try and get out there once in a while, that are actually talking about things that are uncomfortable, that don't necessarily have a solution, big ribbon tied around it at the end, and that, really just get conversation going. That's all I tell people. When I'm out there, I'm just trying to start a conversation, and hopefully if I do a decent job, you leave here and start a conversation yourself.
Excellent.
Yeah.
We have a saying up on my one page, Woman Rising, was spelled with a Y, and it says, comfortable people never change positions. Radical people make us uncomfortable and force us to ask questions and change positions. Be radical.
Yeah, go to the root. You're right, absolutely. Guy, you want to chime in?
Yeah, that's awesome. I had something to say quite a while ago, and pretty much forgot what it was, but that's okay. No. Your notion of discomfort brings to mind something I thought when I was teaching. From my very early days in teaching, I realized that if you're learning anything of importance, you're probably going to be uncomfortable. You can learn the times tables, and it's not uncomfortable. And you can learn sentence structure, and that's not uncomfortable. But if you're learning something important, something that you've never learned before, it almost always involves unlearning something that you already knew, and that's uncomfortable. So
true.
I think afflicting the comfortable is a good idea.
Absolutely. And Ronnie, when you speak to people, do you tell them that you're a radical?
No, I hope it comes across.
Because I find that if I do tell people that, they bring in the obviously hijacked definition of a radical, and they think I'm some sort of extremist and I'm going to blow some shit up and I'm a terrorist. But they never think of it as far, as actually trying to get to the root of the issues that we talk about daily. It seems to me they cannot make the connections, and they compartmentalize everything. And so I try to point out, being radical is trying to break down those compartments and seeing how things connect. And so I'm always interested to see people's reaction if you mention or I mention that, we're radicals.
I should start doing that, actually. It's the Supertramp song from when I was little. I love it. Watch what you say. They'll be calling you a radical.
Right, yeah. The logical
song.
I
love that song.
Yeah.
Yes, the logical song. I'm ruled by logic. It's not logical to just run headlong into the void. It's, can we just, stop and see what we're doing and maybe do things a little bit better and maybe maybe we can be a little less in pain. Can we cut down the population before nature does it for us? Because she will.
Right.
If we don't do it, she will. And you know what? It's going to be a whole lot more painful when she does it. Look at the Zika virus.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, absolutely. I used to start my presentations for a while with that mathematical symbol we used to take the root of something, to take the square root, for example. I'd put it up on the board, and I'd ask the students in the crowd, what is that? And they'd say, it's a square root symbol. I said, no, that's what it does. That's its function. But what is it called? And nobody knew, because by the time you get to college, you don't remember anything you learned in seventh grade. And then finally, we'd ramble around for a while, and we'd all figure out that the word for that is radical. And why is it radical? Because it gets to the root of.
Oh, I love that.
And so I used to use that all the time. You know, I lost my way somewhere along my path. So I heard everybody, but you might want to start using that because mostly we don't know what the words are that we're associating with some behavior. So we say extremist. Radical has come to mean extremist, as Mike pointed out. And I get that all the time. Oh, he's just a radical. And what they really mean is extremist, because I take it as a compliment when somebody calls me a radical.
Definitely. I would take it as such, too.
But most people, told someone most people that, don't mean it that way.
No, they don't.
Well, like the song, like you just said, like the song said, they'll be calling you a radical, and it's not a compliment in the song, at least.
Right,
so, Ronnie, last
waves,
question for you as we wind up. Where do you go from here? What's next for you?
I'm lining up more presentations, and I'll morph them as I go. Hope to have the book. We're going to self-publish because, well, that's the only way to go right now. And hope to have that up in June.
Okay.
And just try to spread it around as much as I can. Eventually get out there and start speaking like Guy does and like you do. Mm-hmm. And just try to spread the word and get people to open their eyes.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it's possible, but I can't not.
Yeah, so could you do us a favor? We have a Facebook page. It's actually two. We have a group and a Facebook page for this particular show. And when your book comes out, could you please post the link to where people can find it and purchase it?
Absolutely, and thank you in advance.
Absolutely. And please, I mean, if you post new blog posts, please share them on our NBL walls, because people will comment, and they tend to share stuff, and your work's great, and we'd love to get it out there a little bit more. And you're one of the few people out there actually going out on the road and speaking, so we'd love to do that for you.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. I will definitely do that. I have some that I can move over. I'm slowly moving over from another blog, so I'll go ahead and share all those because you've obviously enjoyed them. Thank you for your comments on them.
Absolutely, yeah. Please share them. We'd love to read them. So,
yeah,
okay.
Please start
Thank
today
you.
when Mike posts the link from the archive, which should be up within the next hour or two. If you could, as comments, post some of your most recent information or what you consider the most radical information, that'd be awesome.
Okay, that's definitely a promise.
All right. Thank you, Ronnie, for joining us. We had a great time, and we love your voice and your work, and keep on keeping on, all right?
All right. Thank you. Hopefully we'll meet you guys in person someday soon before
it's
too late.
Thank you, Ronnie. Thanks very much.
Thank
Peace.
You very much. All right.
All right, Guy, any stories from the road as we wind down here?
Always. Always. I meet the most amazing people, and often I mean that as a compliment, and sometimes – sometimes I don't, even though people might take it as a compliment, like I do, right? So they tell me I'm a radical, I think that's a compliment. I tell them they're jerks, and they think that's a compliment. Whatever. No, but generally it's been quite good. I'm surprised at the people who continue to come to my presentations and don't have any idea what I'm going to be talking about.
That's the trick. That's how you get them in the door.
Yeah. You know, in Middletown, which was where the Valley Fire was in September, so this is in north central California, big fire, burned down a bunch of homes. firefighters lost their lives. It was a big deal, and it's a recent memory. So these people are scarred still. I mean, they're in a lot of pain, and I've written and done quite a bit of research on fire ecology and fire management, and somehow the majority of the audience thought I would be telling them how to fix it. I'm your fix-it guy.
You're not. I don't know if people know that, but you are not a fix-it guy.
Well, they know that now, but they didn't know it when I came in there. And within 20 minutes, we started with 35 people. Within 20 minutes, there was less than half that number. And
wow.
People were angry, and they yelled at me. And even at some woman's private house in Santa Cruz, and I've stayed in this house before, this person is a lifelong activist. She's fantastic. I interact with her on a regular basis. She's in her early 70s. She promotes the local film festival and all these environmental and social justice things. And so she invited a bunch of her friends over, and there were about 40 of her friends there. And the first guy to talk dropped 20 F-bombs on me before he really even got warmed up to ask a question. And he didn't ever get around to a question.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I watched some of your Q&As that Mark's been posting online, and, you know, I can only watch so much because there's actually very few questions. There's a lot of diatribes and monologues and soliloquies before anybody actually, if they ever, ask a question. It seems to me they just want to vent on you.
Yeah. And I've been hearing...
No, I think we lost Guy for a second, so he'll be calling in a minute. But, you know, on that point, I watched – I forget which particular event it was, but I probably watched the first 20 minutes of the Q&A, and I think really within the first 15 or 20 minutes, there were only three people that got to the microphone. And those three people literally talked for about 5 minutes each, it seemed, before they actually – sort of, I think, asked a question. What Guy did was he got in there and kind of created an answer for a question he thinks they were trying to get to. And, you know, more power to him. He seems to have grown very patient. Guy, you there yet?
Yeah, sorry about that. You'd think in Southern California, where there's a person every square inch, that they'd have good cell service, but you'd be mistaken about that.
I was just saying to the audience that I think what I noticed is that your patience has really grown actually over the years, because you know what to expect. People are going to vent in the Q&A, and I can see it in your facial expressions a little bit, because I know you so well that, you know, oh, here it comes, and I've heard this about a million times. But you do a pretty good job of masking it and staying, you know, your tone of voice stays calm. And I think that's what I've noticed the most over the years, is that you've remained patient.
Well, I think that's true, and I've heard that from a lot of people on this trip, that they can't believe I can sit there and listen to that. And I do let people go on, especially if it's a pretty small group of people, and get it out of their system, because there's really no stopping these people. So we might as well do it in their outloud voices in front of a bunch of people. And then sometimes I point out, okay, it sounds to me like if we're using Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief here, it sounds like you're still in bargaining, stage three.
Right.
And this is not my opinion that I'm presenting. This is the actual evidence that I'm presenting. And so why don't you go to this long essay, and I always finish with a link to my long, often updated climate change summary and update. I said, why don't you just go to that essay and tell me where I'm wrong? Because, you know, I'm not a big fan of my own death, much less the extinction of our entire species, and never mind the 150 to 200 species we're driving to extinction every day that are humans. And so please, please tell me I'm wrong. And then people, you know, they sort of back off, and they get that I don't want, that I'm not promoting near-term human extinction.
Right.
I'm just presenting the evidence.
Yeah. I mean, and I know you've mentioned it before, you know, what I generally say, and if they don't want to go to the essay, just tell them to sit in the mall 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because you look at human behavior, at least civilized human behavior. Speaking of human behavior, the train is right now going right by San Onofre nuclear power plant.
Ah, perfect.
That's what we'll do to boil water. So yeah. obviously, we got this figured out, or not.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, since you're going by the power plant, let's wrap it up here. Have a great trip, and have Mark keep posting those Q&As. They're great. So.
Thanks, right, Mike. Folks. I'm due back in your neck of the woods in about 4 days, so winding up here.
All right, we'll catch up then. That about wraps it up. Make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last, the Progressive Radio Network. Join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bats Last on PRN.fm. Feel free to post questions you'd like us to address on the show. And please share the link to the show. And continue to follow Guy's blog at GuyMcPherson.com. My work at the Good Men Project. For further updates, essays, and speaking tours, go to Guy's blog. We'll see you on the radio next Tuesday, and we'll chat with activist T.R. McKenzie. If you missed the show, make sure to find us on the archives at PRN.fm, Stitcher.com, or rate us on iTunes. Thanks again to Ronnie Dam. Afra's in for his music. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end,
nature bats last. She's grown.